everyone.
My name is Adela Scotland, and welcome to the second episode of Color Your Life. Okay, I definitely have to work on making that jingle more jingly. Anyways, so for today's episode, we are going to be looking at the one and only Sundiata Keita, who was the founder of the Malian Empire, the most powerful African empire to ever exist, and while it was located in West Africa. So before I start to geek out on you on Sundiata Keita, who is one of my role models and most favorite people to have ever walked the face of the earth, let me just tell you how I got introduced to this powerful, amazing, and dynamic man. It was 2016, and every year my school enters the National African History Quiz put on by the Emancipation Committee, I think that's their name, of Trinidad and Tobago. Basically, the competition is aimed at spreading awareness about African history, and it takes place during African History Month. And my section was the section on stories, and I had to learn three stories about three different significant events in African history. So I had to learn about the Malian Empire, I had to do the Pusa Rebellion, and the Natituna Rebellion, who I am definitely doing an episode on, because that rebellion was amazing in itself. And I fell in love with the Malian Empire from the very first time I read the section. It was like a lot of pages of prolific history and, obviously, you know, the story. But I memorized it. When I tell you I memorized it, I mean, I would stand up before the competition with my teachers from school, and I would just recite the entire page flawlessly. And, their jaws would just drop. Like, damn, how did she do this? And I'm just like, boom! You know, power to the people! Anyways, and ever since then, I have been obsessed with Mali and all things Mali. That's why, as I keep saying, my Form 5 SBA was on, why don't y'all include these things in this history syllabus? Like, these are things that we need to know, because Africa was a great nation. So, without further ado, let's get into Sundiata Keita. So, I'm gonna start by just giving you guys some straight facts from a straight factual source, because, we have to have primary sources of data, you know, just so I could be 100% certain that I am doing my job and educating my listeners. And then I will just start to ramble on in my brain from what I know, which, you know, today I was thinking, the human brain is actually ridiculously incredible. The capacity to store information is astounding. Like, how does my head store all these things, man? Like, how? Okay, I don't know what voice that was that I just did, but it's definitely not happening again. Okay, so I am here on nationalgeographic.org because my favorite site to go to for historical references is actually history.com, but they don't have an issue on our boy Sundiata Keita, which I find is very, very bad, because actually the Disney movie The Lion King is actually the story about Sundiata Keita. By the way, our little boy baby Simba is Sundiata Keita, yo, and Scar is the king of the Ghana Empire. Now, Disney didn't actually say, you know, this character represents this historical figure, but I put two and two together. And after this story that I'm going to share with you. Hopefully, you can too. So, Sundia Takeda was the first ruler of the Maui Empire in the 13th century CE. He laid the foundation for a powerful and wealthy African empire and proclaimed the first charter of human rights, the Mandan Charter. You guys are going to hear me geek out on the Mandan Charter, also known as the Korican Fuga, after I just, you know, tell you guys about the actual man. Like, that document was a prolific. So, Sundia Takeda was the first ruler of the Maui Empire from 1235 CE to 1255 CE. So, yeah, that's his reign. I'll get his birth date for you guys after I read this, because I just realized that National Geographic does not have the guy's birthday, and I tried to memorize it, like, this entire morning, but, well, obviously that didn't work out. Anyways, so, Sundia Takeda, whose name means Lion Prince, was born early in the 13th century to a noble family within the Malinke people. The Malinke kingdom, Kangaba, was part of the Ghana Empire of West Africa, another formidable empire, by the way. Oral stories about Keita say that he was a sickly child, or suffered from some sort of physical impairment. He couldn't walk, actually. This explains why, when his brothers were killed by the rulers of Ghana, he was spared. Eventually, he became a local leader of the kingdom of Gangaba. When the Ghana Empire tried to impose trade restrictions on the Malinke, Keita began a revolt. He managed to unite several peoples of West Africa to fight against Ghana's king, Summon Guru! Oh yes, Summon Guru Kante was like the main antagonist in the whole start of the Mali Empire. I mean, I guess he probably was a good guy, but I don't like him because he didn't like my boy Sundia Takeda, and that's that. He defeated Summon Guru at the Battle of Kirina in 1235 CE. After that, Keita's generals began to conquer other territories in West Africa. He called his new kingdom the Maui Empire, which would become one of the richest empires in the world. So this is the last paragraph I'm going to be reading from my primary source, and then it's just gonna be me spitting some facts that I have stored in my brain. Keita's victory over Summon Guru marked the beginning of the Mali Empire. Keita decided to rebuild the then destroyed city of Niani near the Sankarini River as his new capital. This area soon became a hub for African and Arab traders. The Mali Empire grew wealthy due to its control of the trade routes, as well as its significant gold and copper resources. So, Sundia Takeda was actually born to, well, a noble family, so he was always of noble birth and noble heritage. However, his mother was a hunchback woman and basically deemed like ugly. People didn't like her, and, you know, the fact that her son was crippled didn't really add to her that's the word I'm looking for, meaningless social status. And, you know, basically when the Ghanans killed his siblings, not all of them though, they spared Sundiata, but, you know, Sundiata was like, no, I'm not gonna let my physical disability stop me from living my life and becoming the man I am destined to be. And even though it took him till the ripe age of 7, the man began to walk. And his half-brother, his last name was Truman. I have him in my spoken word. So Truman, his half-brother, and his mother were like, no! And Sundiata Keita's mom took him and his sisters to exile in this place called Mema. Now, as you would have heard, the Ghana Empire decided that they were going to impose a lot of trade restrictions on the Malinke people. Now, You know, around this time, the world is very superstitious, and in African culture, the power of prophecy is very, very important and very, very sacred. And there was a prophecy that there would be a great leader from the Malinke people, but he would have a very tricky start to life, you know, but eventually he will get over his physical disability and be the person to free the Malinke people, also known as the Mande or Manden people, from the Ghana Empire. And everyone knew that that man was none other than Sunday Atiketa, because boy oh boy was this boy smart. And when he did learn to walk, he was strong and powerful, very tenacious. The place where they were in exile, Mema, he actually was favored by the king and was put in charge of a chiefdom, as I would have read in the excerpt from National Geographic. So the boy was like really, really living his life. And you know, the people of the Malinke tribe, you know, well, tribes, because there was actually 13 Malinke tribes, they sent for Sunday Atiketa, and they brought him back to his hometown with like an army by his side. And the brilliant Sunday Atiketa defeated Samunguru Kante in 1235 at the Battle of Karimi. I hope I pronounced that right. Was it Karimi? Let me get the exact pronunciation of the word, because I really want to do, you know, history justice, because that is the whole point of this podcast. So it was the Battle of... Shoot, I said bottle. Ha! It was the Battle of Kirina. Right. And he became the first emperor of the Mali Empire. He was the first of the Mandinka line of kings to adopt the royal title Mansa, King, Emperor of the Mandinka people. Mansa means king or emperor in the Mandinka language. So basically, the Epic of Sunday Atiketa, epics are what Africans call their historical documents, is really an amazing one and a really powerful one. So, context, 13th century, this is around the 1200s, you know, and well, the empire did last into the 14th century, because as I told you in my spoken word on my last podcast, Abubakari II of Mali, you know, made it to the Caribbean, and that was in the 1300s. Anyways, yes, Sunday Atiketa was actually a fantastic king, and that's what I want to talk about now. I'm gonna be geeking off on my boy. So, well, first of all, you know, he defeated the Ghanans, and also known as the Soso, you know, African language, I think it's actually really beautiful. Anyways, and he formed the Mali Empire. With that, he greatly strengthened the economy. He built his capital of Niani near a lake, which meant cha-ching, because of, you know, transport and trade, especially in things of salt and agriculture. And, you know, that in itself is already, like, amazing, because around this time, there was something going on, well, starting, brewing, something known as the bubonic plague, and Europe was in a hot mess, because first of all, it was the Dark Ages, and the Vikings, and other, you know, power-hungry groups and people who were just, like, killing everybody out, you know, and then so many diseases and political upheaval and instability was plaguing Europe, along with an actual plague at the time. But, you know, they just weren't thriving, man. Meanwhile, back in Africa, the Mandan people were getting rich, rich, rich. And they were actually the second largest empire in the world, second most powerful, and well, they were the richest. They were the richest empire of all time. But I kept saying second because all the Mongols. The Mongols of China were just like next level amazing. And of course, I am doing an episode on the Mongols of China. Anyway, so yeah, Sun the Educator did that. He won a lot of territories, even though he did have assistance from military generals, and really expanded the Malian Empire. He laid the foundation for Timbuktu. Timbuktu was the intellectual hub of the world up until Europe came and they burned down Timbuktu. The scholars in Timbuktu were producing very, very next level, high level books in science. This is biology, physics, astrology. They were doing literature, they were doing geography. They were very, very, very advanced. In fact, it was because of their work and the establishment of Timbuktu that Christopher Columbus knew that the earth was round. He learned that from the Africans. Anyways, also, there is this concept called syncretism. Syncretism is where you merge two or more religions together. Now, Sun Diatta was, at his core, an African traditionalist, and he has been described by numerous oral accounts as a magician. He was very into his African magic, you know, and like, he liked to do all of his African dances, but he understood that in order to become the economic and intellectual hub of the world, he needed to accept Islam. And he merged Islam and African traditional beliefs together and produced an entire new form on its own. And he did not force Islam on his people. Instead, he allowed them to have freedom of choice in religion and practice any religion they saw fit. And when guests and visitors came to visit Mali, he did not just show them the Islam way of life. He showed them a new form of Islam, a form of Islam that integrated African dances, African rituals, African ceremonies. Ibn Battuta, who I'm also doing an episode on, was like mind blown by this, and it actually became part of the legacy of the Malian Empire. You know, and I think that that is just so dynamic and so profound because, you know, honestly, the only other person that I've ever read or heard about that allowed freedom of religion was actually Genghis Khan, who I'm also doing an episode on. So that in itself, you know, was just really prolific and really dynamic. Now, let's talk about the society. Malian society was ridiculously safe. Numerous scholars, including again Ibn Battuta, because Ibn Battuta went everywhere, documented that it was so safe that you could walk about in the late at night or in the wee hours of the morning with all of your possessions and not worry about being robbed, because that was not the way of the people. They did not steal, they did not rob, they did not kill. It was free from crime and violence. These are words that I'm taking directly out of scholars like Ibn Battuta. These are what they said about the Malian Empire. It was a society free from crime. They were peaceful. They loved one another. They treated their neighbor as they would have liked to be treated themselves. That definitely was not happening in any other part of the world at the time, and definitely not today. Which is why when, you know, these European scholars want to tell me that my homeland was filled with with there were these barbarian people and scandalous people and promiscuous people, I'm like, that wasn't you. And I have further evidence to support the notion that Africa was actually advanced beyond Europeans' years by like infinities, because women were equal. Women had to be respected. Women had to be educated. women had to take up strategic roles in management. Women had to have a say in their life. You could not beat a woman. I will get more into that when I tell you about the Curriculum Fugue clause. I think it's clause 15 of the Curriculum Fugue says, do not beat women, our mothers. So beautiful. Children had to be educated. You had to go to school once you were a child. You go to school in the morning and then in the evening. You had to learn about environmental preservation and go and work on the fields so that you could learn how to continue sustainable living. Yes, that was mandatory. Creating sustainable living is something that the world has forgotten to do. Also, when it comes to the concept of a prisoner of war, people always think the worst. But in Mali, another clause of the Curriculum Fugue was, you can kill the enemy, but not humiliate him. Beautiful. Beautiful. So I guess I should just get right into the Curriculum Fugue, because you guys are probably wondering, well, what is this Curriculum Fugue? So the Mandan Charter, or the Curriculum Fugue, was the very first document of human rights in the entire existence of humanity. Yes, Africa did that. Africa started human rights. And the Curriculum Fugue was basically the law of the Mandan people. You had to abide by this, and it was so prolific. It had feminist ideologies in it. Women were to be equal, women were to be treated with respect, women were to be able to work, they would be able to have managerial positions which you couldn't have in any other civilization in the world at that time, especially not Europe. As well as, as I told you, children had to be educated. They had to be educated about environmental conservation. You know, you weren't allowed to kill mercilessly. You weren't allowed to steal. They also have this really cool clause that I find really interesting. If it is that you tell a lie for over 40 years, then the lie becomes truth. You know, they were very, very specific when it came down to every aspect of human existence. And I think that that is so beautiful. They had slaves. Now, slaves were often prisoners of war or people who broke the law. But the thing is, the slaves had rights, the same rights as any citizen. And if, you know, the slave was actually someone who was really smart, someone who they saw was willing to change, or maybe, you know, they thought after a certain period of time that they have served their time, they actually could have taken up a position in political administration. That never happened anywhere else in the whole world. So I'm gonna pull up the Curriculum Fugue now and read some clauses from it, actually, because I am obsessed with this document. Always have, always will be. So, they had different clauses. They had social organization. They had, let's go to the next one. Preservation of nature, preservation of goods. They had the treatment of women and children. So let us go now. Article 14 says, never offend women, our mothers. Article 15 says, never beat a married woman before her husband has tried to correct the problem. Article 16, women, apart from their everyday occupations, should be associated with all our management. Do not ill-treat slaves. We are the master of the slave, not the bag he carries. Let that sink in. I really do. I really, really want that to sink in. Article 23 says, never betray one another. Respect your word of honor. Article 24, in Mandan, do not maltreat the foreigners. Like, I mean, this is so, so Like, I'm so profound. They even had stuff for divorce. Article 30 in Mandate. Divorce is tolerated for one of the following reasons: the impotence of the husband, the madness of one of the spouses, the husband's incapability of assuming the obligations due to marriage. Like, they allowed divorce. That is just amazing. Preservation of nature. Article 38. Before setting fire to the bush, don't look at the ground. Raise your head in the direction of the top of the trees to see whether they bear fruits or flowers. Like, this is just so amazing. Article 9. Children's education behoves the entire society. The parental authority and consequence falls to everyone. Like, they recognize that children were the future and ensured that they were educated. These are ideas, concepts, and philosophies that weren't even conceived in the brains of European scholars until the age of the Enlightenment, which came after the Renaissance. But that was in the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries when, you know, the Europeans who claimed that they were so much superior to us, so much better than us, so much more advanced than us, and who justified their enslavement of our people based on our inferiority. That argument cannot hold, and it should not hold anymore, because as we have seen here today, people, that was not the case. These people had complex lives. They had documentation of human rights. They were very prolific. Sundiata Keita did all of this. Now, you know, all good things must come to an end, and every great man must meet his doom. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but I just really, really hope that I did a good job at telling you guys how successful Sundiata Keita was in setting up the Mali Empire. And I am going to talk about Mansa Musa, his great nephew, on another episode to continue telling you about the legacy of the Mali Empire, the richest empire in all of history. Let's just let that sink in for a second. Like, they had diplomacy. Like, they accepted Islam because they knew it was beneficial to their trade, but they did not stray from their roots, and they were not afraid when they had Islam visitors, which at this period in time would have been the main people entering any territory in Africa. They showed them their culture. They showed them their culture with pride. I can't wait to read for you guys what Ibn Battuta said when he saw that. But yeah. And we just really have to appreciate this. We really have to appreciate how advanced Africa was and the intelligence, the liquid gold that Europe carelessly and mindlessly just threw away. They just came and they just destroyed an entire great civilization, because every single civilization that ever occupied West Africa was great and amazing in their own way. Mali was just the best, but every single civilization in West Africa, the area hit hardest of all by colonialism and slavery, was profound and dynamic. Like, when I tell you, people died to see Timbuktu. People died to behold the majesty. Oh my gosh, yes. Sundiata Keita loved architecture, by the way, and he took in the Moors, because the Moors were architectural geniuses, and he had them construct magnificent buildings all across his city. They had the latest feat in advancements, yeah, I guess I could use that term. Like, so they weren't living in huts or shacks and all the other things that historians feed you. They lived in decadent palaces, so, you know, the noble people. And the town had glorious, magnificent buildings. They had their schools, they had their trading hubs, you know, their boats were specifically designed for the rivers in which they traveled. They were a really, 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 really advanced civilization, and I really, really, really want to bring that point home to you guys, because I don't know, actually getting really emotional right now, because I just can't believe that one man could look at another man's life and deem it unworthy just because my way of life is different to yours. Does not make it any less legitimate. Yes. Anyways, oh my gosh. Okay, so I think it is time for my spoken word. I think it is time for my spoken word because, well, you know, after my spoken word, I guess I'm gonna give a few closing remarks. Oh, shoot. I need to talk about how the main died. Oopsie! Well, there is actually no conclusive statement on how Sunday Etiquette died. Some people said that he was killed by an opponent. Some people say that he was killed by a family member who wanted to succeed him. But the version of the story that most historians agree on, and the one that I am familiar with, was that Sunday Etiquette died by drowning. The Lion Prince killed by the waves of the sea. You know, pity that this great man couldn't live a long life and die of natural causes, but I guess the ocean is the ocean, and the ocean really sucks on a bad day. Alright, so time for my spoken word on Sunday Etiquette. This actually took me really long to write because I wanted it to be perfect, and also my spoken word piece on Christopher Columbus was written in the shower, which is where I get like my best ideas, but I wrote this a couple hours ago while lying down on my bed. So without further ado, I present it to you. The Lion King by Adela Scotland. Blood made of gold flows through his veins. His soul forever rests in Africa's waves. He united the 13 Mandinka tribes, and from his chest did the most powerful African empire thrive. Around this time, the world was bleak. The Dark Ages in Europe was at its peak. And though the Mongol Empire outshined them all, the Mali Empire remained formidable until its fall. Sunday Etiquette, the Lion King, possessed the leadership to make Africa sing, scorned for being born to the Buffalo Woman, and despite the resentment of his half-brother Dankaram Tumen, he lived up to the prophecies and became a powerful, strong man. His inability to walk did not stop him. From defeating the Ghana Empire, he tried to oppress him. Taking advantage of his people was their mistake. They had no idea that their golden crown was weak and at stake. He defeated them effortlessly, wore his skin with pride. He and his descendants would forever go down in history and reveal the royalty of Africa in all its glory. Cultured and poised, that's who he was. He didn't make any decisions just because. Cultural syncretism of Islam and traditional African beliefs. He integrated Islam and foreign diplomacy. He allowed his people to still be who they are. And scholars came to witness this integration from Nair and Bart. He paved the way for Timbuktu. And I cannot emphasize how much intellectuals worshipped the majesty of Timbuktu. The first documents of profound humanism he put in the game. Equality, peace, and justice were associated with his name. He boosted the economy, gave rights to those in slavery. Yeah, that's right. Slaves could hold positions of political authority. And before you get on my case of the Malians having slaves in the first place, a slave in Mali was a prisoner of war, or a really terrible person who broke the Malian law. They were keen on being righteous, just, and fair. So they didn't just steal mass numbers of people from everywhere. Okay, let me stop ranting on and on. I just really want the legacy of the Mali Empire to live on and on. Learn the truth about Africa. It has many stories to share and spread black pride everywhere. Okay, that read was probably a little shaky. I hope it didn't bore anyone or put anybody to sleep. You know, some days I'm gonna have a really banger piece for you at the end. Other days I'm just gonna have a very nice, well-dictioned. Dictioned is the choice of words in a poetic piece for you. And I did this in the style of free verse, which is something that I'm now experimenting with. This is my second free verse piece. So, yeah! Yay to try new things! Anyways, guys, I really do hope that you guys left today's episode feeling really proud to be black. Because I know in this world, it is really, really hard when everywhere you turn, everywhere you look, you just see the white supremacist agenda. You know, TV shows, songs, movies, literature, literally everything is telling you that you are not enough, that you are not good enough. But I want you to know that you are enough and that you are good enough. And if Sandia Takeda could learn to walk even though he was crippled, you can do anything you put your mind to. That is the legacy that runs through our veins. Like he said, golden blood runs through our veins, guys. We are gonna change the world. You know, the people that came before us created a world that we may not be too proud to be a part of, but we can be the generation to change that. We can be the generation that reclaims black awesomeness. So yeah, guys, thank you so much for clicking on my podcast and listening to this episode. Please, guys, I would love questions. Please ask me questions. Let me answer your questions. I want to start interacting more with listeners, even though there aren't that many right now, but I'm working on that. I'm working on getting more people listening to my podcast. Also, good news. I have my podcast up on, well, Anchor Podcast. Spotify, I keep pronouncing it wrong, but I guess you guys will guess what I'm talking about. Radio Podcast, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. So you guys can listen to it anywhere! So that's really, really cool. Let me give you guys a little overground foreview. Okay, I really don't know. On what's coming next. I was supposed to do Alexander Hamilton today, but that man's life was a lot. And I am definitely going to need more than 1 week to prepare an episode on a man who accomplished so much in a ridiculously short space of time. In addition to him, I am working on Atahualpa! I love Atahualpa. I'm also working on Montezuma. I also love Montezuma. And hopefully a really nice edition on local great musical artist. So yeah, stay tuned for all of those things. It has been really nice talking about Sunday Educator for the last 14 minutes. Have a good week, have a good day, and thank you for taking the time to color your life.